Welcome to a special edition of 1010 Thrive, our 2024 five-part Easter special. 10 on the wrong side of the Easter story.
I thought I understood the plan, believed that by forcing his hand, I could accelerate the kingdom's arrival, see him claim his throne and liberate our people. How could I have been so profoundly misguided? My actions, driven by impatience and avarice, now echo with a clink of 30 silver coins, a price I naively placed on the priceless. As I walked with him, witnessed the miracles, the compassion, the authority with which he spoke, I was blind to the true nature of his kingship. It was not to be one of earthly power and dominion, but of sacrificial love, of a throne born out of suffering and service. In my foolishness, I sought to manipulate divine will, oblivious to the depth of the narrative I was entangling myself in. Now, his eyes, brimming with a sorrow that understood betrayal yet still held love, haunt me. They saw not just the act of treachery, but the brokenness within me that led to the kiss of death in that garden. That moment, when our gazes locked and I delivered him to his enemies, is etched in my soul, a stark reminder of the abyss between my intentions and the harrowing reality I precipitated.
Caiaphas, the High Priest.
In the quiet chambers of my own council, where the echoes of the past mingle with the whispers of the present, as High Priest of the Temple, I ponder the tumultuous events that have reshaped our world. My actions, once draped in the certainty of religious and political necessity, now quiver under the weight of doubt and introspection. I believed, with a conviction as firm as the stones of the temple, that I was preserving the sanctity of our traditions and protecting the people from the chaos of this man Jesus, who claimed kinship with God himself. He seemed a threat to the delicate balance we maintained with Rome, a disruptor of the law and order we had painstakingly upheld. In my zeal to safeguard our faith and our nation, I orchestrated the ultimate betrayal, condemning this so-called King of the Jews. I told myself it was for the greater good, that the sacrifice of one man would preserve the many. It is better, I reasoned, that one man die for the people, than that the whole nation perish. The more I reflect, the more I am besieged by the gnawing suspicion that I have condemned the innocent. Was he, in fact, the Messiah we have long awaited, the one whose coming was foretold by the prophets, whose words I have studied and revered?
Annas, the former high priest.
Our decision to eliminate Jesus was not just prudent, but necessary. The man was a provocateur, a threat to the sanctity and order of our society, one that we, as the guardians of our faith and people, were duty-bound to extinguish. My son-in-law and successor, Joseph Caiaphas, frets over the possibility that we misjudged Jesus, contemplating with undue sentimentality that perhaps we played into some divine orchestration. But I stand firm in our actions, resolute in the conviction that in condemning Jesus, we preserved the integrity of our traditions and protected our people from the chaos of misguided messianic fervor. It's a sign of strength, not weakness, to quell the seeds of rebellion and heresy. Jesus, with his radical teachings and blatant disregard for our laws, was leading the masses astray, challenging the very foundations upon which our authority is built. His execution, far from being a misstep, was a necessary act of religious and political hygiene, cleansing our community of a dangerous influence.
Pontius Pilate.
He stood before me, an enigma, radiating a calm sovereignty in chains, unsettling the very foundations of my authority. I washed my hands, a futile gesture to cleanse the stain of his blood from my conscience, yet the waters of regret run deep and unyielding. How could I, a governor seasoned in the art of judgment, falter so profoundly? I paraded justice, yet cowered before the crowd's clamor for crucifixion, betraying both my office and soul. He claimed a kingdom not of this world, and I, in my blindness, sentenced truth itself to death. The echoes of what is truth mock me still, for in his gaze I glimpsed a truth too vast for my worldly court, leaving me forever adrift in the shadow of a condemned man who was, perhaps, the king I never understood.
Herod Antipas.
I sought amusement in Jesus' trial, yearning for miracles as one craves theatrical spectacles, dismissing the gravity of his presence with a jest and a sneer. Yet in the silent watches of the night, his image haunts me, his serene defiance and the profound sadness in his eyes, as if he pitied me, pitied my ignorance. I adorned him in mocking purple, a caricature of royalty, to deflect the unsettling truth in his words, in his very being. What folly! I, who revel in the role of judge, played the fool, unwittingly casting myself as a pawn in a drama far beyond my court's petty intrigues. The echo of my laughter in the face of his silent judgment now rings hollow. For in seeking to belittle the man who spoke of truth and life, I exposed my own vacuity. Jesus, whom I dismissed as a harmless visionary, bore a kingly dignity in his suffering, a dignity I failed to see, blinded by hubris. His kingdom, not of this realm, endures while my legacy crumbles, revealing a ruler who, confronted with the embodiment of truth, chose the comfort of skepticism and the cowardice of indecision.
A Roman soldier.
We mocked him, clothed him in a purple robe, placed a crown of thorns on his head, striking him and spitting on him. We cast lots to divide his garments among ourselves. And we drove nails through his hands and feet. We were doing our job, we said. Following orders, we said. But even heathens like us could tell that this man was innocent.
Barabbas.
In the dimness of my cell, I awaited my fate, only to be thrust into an unforeseen path of freedom. My life, spared by a mob's clamor, intertwined with that of Jesus, a man whose only crime, it seemed, was to challenge the established order with words of truth and acts of compassion. As I stepped into the light, freed, yet shackled by confusion and guilt, I beheld him, beaten, scorned, a king crowned with thorns. The crowd, which roared for my release, now bayed for his blood, a spectacle of mercy and injustice colliding before my bewildered eyes. How did I, Barabbas, a man of violence and rebellion, miss the revolution of the heart this Jesus offered? Freed in body, I remain imprisoned in spirit, pondering the mystery of a man who transformed my sentence of death into a question of life, compelling me to confront the truth of who he was and who I am meant to be.
Justus.
Here I hang, a wretched thief, crucified beside the man called Jesus. Mockery and scorn were my weapons against life's injustices, and now, in death's embrace, I wielded them against this silent sufferer who claims a kingdom. My pain, my anger, I hurled at him, demanding he save us if he truly was the Christ. Yet, as the soldiers approach me to break my legs and end my life, a chilling doubt seeps into my scornful heart. His presence, his peace amidst the agony, unnerves me. Did I, in my bitter jest, miss the truth before my eyes? Dismas saw something in Jesus, something that made him plead for remembrance in a coming kingdom. What did he see that I did not? Desperation and defiance have been my creed, but now, as darkness looms, I wonder, was this Jesus more than my taunts perceived? In rejecting his silent offer of grace, have I condemned myself, not to death, but to a despair far deeper? And why do I get the feeling that death is not the end for him?
A false witness.
As one of the false witnesses, my words were weapons, fashioned in a forge of fear and coercion, aimed to bring down Jesus of Nazareth. The Sanhedrin officials told me it was for the greater good that this man threatened the very fabric of our society with his radical teachings and claims of divinity. I testified that I heard him plot the destruction of the temple, that he refused to pay taxes to Caesar, and that he claimed to be king of the Jews. But now, as silence settles over the city that screamed for his blood, I grapple with the gnawing doubt that festers in my soul. His eyes, brimming with a sorrowful knowing, met mine as I wove my fabrications, piercing through the veil of my pretense. He spoke of truth, lived a message of love and forgiveness so profound that even my deepest deceits trembled in their shadow. I am haunted by the realization that in my eagerness to condemn, I may have witnessed the embodiment of truth itself and called it a lie.
Someone in the crowd.
I have always been caught up in crowds. I was in the crowd that followed Jesus, near the town of Bethsaida, because we saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. I was in the crowd in Jerusalem, on the first day of the week, waving palm branches and singing, "Hosanna in the highest," when the Nazarene rode into the city on a donkey. And I was in the crowd, outside the Antonia fortress, screaming for the Roman governor to crucify Jesus. Swept up in the tide of collective outrage, I saw him, beaten and silent, a figure of scorn and derision, yet bearing a dignity that now haunts my every waking moment. How did we come to this, to demand the death of a man whose crimes we could not clearly specify, driven by fear, manipulation, and a hunger for spectacle?
Where are you this Easter? Are you on the right side? to be continued.